Lucio Mesquita, you are the head of the Americas and Europe of the BBC World Service. Welcome to ThoughtCast.
Thank you.
It seems that NPR has evolved from an alternative, slightly funky, rather individual organization to the establishment. And it has a lot of money to work with and play with and lose. My question is, here in America, program directors and general managers are worrying about money, not about that there isn't enough of it, but that this is a business now that they're running. Is this part of the unique privilege of the BBC that the focus is more pure?
I wouldn't go into the kind of the purity or, you know, the perfect world, and I would tend to disagree a bit with you. I'm a manager as well. You have to think of how to pay the bills. It can be great having fantastic ideas, but you know, if you can't get the money, the fantastic ideas will stop where they are. Fantastic ideas, nothing else. So you know, there are tough decisions which basically have to be made. Let's take the BBC. The BBC is a good example. BBC has this license fee, therefore, you know, every household with a television set in the UK has to pay a fee. It's not cheap. By all means, it's about $200 a year, which basically for a lot of people, it's nothing. But actually the person on benefits, on the welfare, they have to pay as well. There are no, apart from the elderly, there are no exclusions. Now, one argument of the kind of purity of a public broadcasting is that we should be doing the classical music, the drama, the things that all the others don't do. Fair enough, that's a good way of seeing that. However, that also dangerously is a very patronizing way of looking at your public. And if you're a public broadcaster, you have to think about what you're doing in terms of popular culture as well. That's why the BBC has, for instance, soap operas. I mean, we hope that our soap opera is better than others and has a bit more of a social consciousness and so on. However, I believe that that is public broadcasting as well. Why? Because the public, in one way or another, paying for that, they like that, and therefore we should do it. The risk, I think, sometimes the confusion it gets a bit on the public broadcasting. I'm not saying that, you know, it's perfect or it's right or wrong. I'm not even getting necessarily details here about who or where is doing this right or wrong. But it's the sense that oddly, that public broadcasting should be about elite broadcasting. And that's a very kind of a bizarre concept as soon as you say that. But take classical music, it's a typical example of, you know, what everyone believes that public broadcasting should be doing. And I think, you know, it's right, it should be doing that. But I don't think any evidence shows that by playing classical music ad nauseum on public channels have increased the take-up or interest in classical music. But at the same time, it means that you're not serving people with other things. So it's all about defining what public broadcasting is about. Is public broadcasting about filling in the gaps the commercial world don't care about? It's a respectable mission and proposition. Let's work on that. But then we can call it public broadcasting in the sense that we are trying to reach out to the public, because it's not. You know, it's a niche kind of a thing we're doing. So it's all about defining what you are and what you want to be. And I think that's the most important part of it.
If we think about Shakespeare, his plays were written for everyone. The famous groundlings enjoyed the body humor, and yet the royalty was also there. This is a concept that is alien to us in America. We do see a division in taste, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not an American. I can't comment on what's the difference in America and so on. I think there is, but then we're, you know, veering into a completely different area in terms of what's culture, what's high culture, and so on. You mentioned that, you know, Shakespeare now is considered sophisticated in the UK as well. You know, it's something that the school children have to learn, but it's considered difficult, and there's a whole kind of a myth and mystique and even kind of a etiquette around, you know, how to consume Shakespeare. And actually when the Globe Theatre was rebuilt in its old site, part, I understand, of what they were trying as well was kind of a let's go back to how it was. I haven't seen people throwing rotten kind of vegetables at the actors yet, but it actually would be great. And it's actually interesting how it goes back and actually shows even that, no, people didn't used to go to plush theatres to see Shakespeare was popular culture. Things, you know, culture also goes through that a lot, and it's historical, things move on. Classical music were pretty much fairly popular music at the time before perhaps hip-hop and others were around. Opera, I love the whole thing about opera, for instance. Opera now is considered one of the most elitist, one of the most sophisticated kind of things you can find. You know, you have to dress up properly to go to these magnificent opera houses. It can go on and on about all this kind of a knowledge you have to have about opera. Now, opera, in many cases, most of them were extremely popular things. No wonder we ended up with the soap opera concept, which not people enjoyed without having to go through the 35 different probably books you have to read before you can just open your mouth about opera. That's the problem I have when actually, in a way, we created this kind of a mystique around certain cultural kind of strands, and then we transformed that into kind of this the elitist kind of a version. So, you know, what is popular, what isn't, or what's proper culture, what is not? I really don't know. I'm not the one to answer that in the US or in the UK or anywhere in the world. But I think sometimes it's just about also what we potentially can accidentally fall into this kind of labeling of what is, and then therefore what's proper for public broadcasting or not.
What are you personally grappling with in your job to move the BBC forward into the future?
I think, you know, very much what most of my colleagues are working with is how to continue with the public broadcasting ethos, the kind of the key of our mission and so on, in a multi-platform, multi-layered world. I find all the time, I keep thinking, you know, I am in a very difficult position as a broadcaster in the sense that what's changing around us is frightening at the speed and how it's challenging the core of everything we knew about our jobs. At the same time, it's fascinating. Sometimes I feel like it must have been the same feeling, perhaps, of when radio started. This completely new kind of a set of things to do that basically you just don't know how to deal with. You're learning, you are dealing with them.
Do you remember silent movies and what happened when audio came in?
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of things adapted, changed, but actually survived. People talk about the death of all sorts of things. Hey, look, it survived. A lot of the actors couldn't cope with that and lost their jobs. A lot of the techniques had to go away, but adaptation. And we always being as human beings, that's why we are here, despite all the perhaps stupid things we do as a race, kind of a species, actually. We are still here. Partly is because we have an amazing ability to adapt. You know, the tablets, the stone kind of things have gone a bit easier on the hand at the moment. But the newspaper concept, that was a newspaper concept, you know, the book concept, have been around all this time. So I think the challenge for us right now is how to find the ways of doing this, and then as a manager, yes, the kind of a degree of how to manage that financially, operationally, so that we can do it. There's a huge degree of multitasking to look at. The great thing, though, I see as a great opportunity is, and in the BBC, while we've done the creative future work, one of the things we talk about a lot is the famous 360-degree commissioning. The commissioning of the material still is absolutely essential and the proper one. Why, how you're doing this. What has to change, and we are changing, is instead of what traditionally would do, I want to commission this documentary for radio, you have to think of, I want to commission this documentary, perhaps full stop. Now, where is it going? Radio, internet, cell phones, smoke signal, I don't care. It's about sort of defining what the market needs. The market, I mean, the public needs. And then, through the commissioning process, from the beginning, you think about how you're going to do that. If you pick up the final documentary and try to turn that into different bits, you're probably going to fail badly. But if from the very beginning, from the moment you are brainstorming your concepts, you work out, I want to do this for the internet, and actually there is this 1 minute version I want to do for cell phones, and there's a 5 minute version for broadcasting or podcasting, and there's a whole hour which will stay in archive, on demand, and so on. I think that's where we have an amazing opportunity to actually reach a much wider audience and potentially actually at a fraction of the cost you would have in doing that separately. But for that, the change, the mindset has to change fundamentally from the production standpoint to the output moment, the moment it reaches out the platform.
It's that's seen as an organic whole. This media form is organic in its different lengths or forms.
Yes.
One of the easiest things is look around you, look around children around you. They are consuming media in that way. I already have. I have a 10-year-old who sits on a computer, doing stuff on a computer. At the same time, television set is on, there is audio on a computer and so on. It gives me a headache, but clearly he consumes in a kind of multi-layered way that I still struggle with the tickers in different speeds on the Bloombergs of life, let alone that kind of thing. However, this generation is basically already used to that kind of a mix and match concept. Are they taking everything in? No way. But at least what they are developing is this kind of a dropping in, seeing what's in there, and then if it calls their attention, they'll do things. Now, if we're going to survive, we have to serve that generation. And if we're going to do that, we have to think about multi-layered commissioning thinking of everything we do. Otherwise, you know, the idea that, oh, now sit here and consume this in the way we think it's proper for you, quite frankly, you're dead. So it's just about finding these different ways of doing things. Besides, these are the people who are also already producing their own content like that. When I get someone producer who say, oh, no, but we can't do video, can only do radio, I said, well, but you know, if you're 12-year-old sitting down with a video recorder and then going to the computer and putting together a video, perhaps to upload on YouTube or whatever, what we're talking up here about, you know, skills and so on, no, it's a lot simpler. That doesn't take the specialist work away. But I think we have to understand that what I keep calling this multi-layered way of producing things is very important for everyone. It's not a question of survival. I think it's the best possible way of serving the public as well.
Well, Lucio Mesquita, thank you so much for joining me.
My pleasure. I hope that has been helpful.